You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts.
Everyone, this is Don with Paranormal Portal. Thanks for joining us tonight. I just wanted to open this episode real quick with congratulations, because this is a bonus episode that Brent did with our friend Cade Moya over in Australia with the Believe podcast. This is Believe Podcast episode 39. I've seen Shadow People, UFO, and Sasquatch. And as I said, it is Cade interviewing our friend Mr. Brent Thomas from the Paranormal Portal. I hope you guys enjoy it. Once again, thank you. Enjoy this bonus episode from our friend Cade, and here we go.
Tonight, I'm joined by Brent Thomas from the Paranormal Portal, and a lot of you will know Brent Thomas. He has that great show. He actually featured on his show a couple of weeks ago, and I ran one of his episodes on our feed here, so a lot of you have probably listened to that. But something you don't know about Brent is he's probably had one of the most fascinating UFO encounters that I've ever heard. He's also had a handful of ghost experiences, and he's had a close encounter with a Sasquatch, and Brent joins us on the show today to talk about all of those. Brent, welcome to the show, mate.
Hey, brother. Thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure, and it's always fun to be on the Believe podcast.
Oh, mate, the honor is all mine, and I still can't get over your UFO encounter. It blows me away.
you know, it was. I don't know why it happened. I don't know, other than, like I said when I was on the show before, it was one of those things I've always looked for, and I was always so kind of disappointed that I never saw anything even, you know, remarkable. I never saw anything other than, you know, just the beautiful natural beauty of the night sky. And then suddenly to be face to face with that was just like, wow. I mean, it's just, I guess with any of this stuff, when it happens, and there's no rhyme or reason or trying to rationalize it. It's just, you're either in the right place at the right time or you're not.
And I think you really got to revel in the moment too, because this is something very, very special that happened, and it doesn't happen to a lot of people. So for it to happen to you is quite extraordinary, and I think you should kind of wear it as a badge of honor, which a lot of people don't when they see these things. They kind of close up and don't ever really talk about it, because I tell you what, if I had an experience like yours, I'll be on the news. I'll be pushing it everywhere. I want everyone to know about it, because it is amazing.
You know, but if you think about the whole situation, I guess I never really wanted to be at the forefront of anything like that anyway, other than doing a show. And this was long before I started doing a show. But it was always my pursuit of the paranormal has always been, you know, very selfish. I guess it's just to reaffirm to myself that there's still magic and mystery in the world, you know, to put it, you know, very lightly. I mean, it's just, But in, you know, in that situation, if I hadn't by chance been looking through night vision binoculars, I would never have known it was there. I would never have been any the wiser. And it was just by that odd chance of me having those at my disposal and being out looking at the night sky and the craft just happening to be there at that moment. It was just the perfect storm. So, but you know, and it's not something I shy away from either. Since doing the show, you know, I've talked about it many times, and I think it's important because doing a show like we do, our audiences are, you know, constantly putting themselves out there and saying, hey, this is what I've seen, this is what I've experienced, blew me away, I don't know how to handle it and stuff. And so I think that instances like this have really helped me to bridge that chasm, so to speak, and, you know, they can understand that I really do understand. Because I've seen things that I can't wrap my head around. I can't rationalize and I can't discard it either. So it does build that commonality and that kindred spirit, you know, to the listeners as well.
Most definitely, mate. Well, do you mind kind of just retelling that story? Because I know there'll be a couple of new listeners that we have on board who maybe have missed that. So can you give me a quick retelling of this?
Yeah.
I'm going to say one of the best UFO stories I've ever heard.
So yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled to, and I'm at the, it's one of those stories that doesn't even ever get old for me to tell it as well. The situation was, I used to telecommute for a company. I worked out of my home in Minnesota, and I worked for a company that did preparedness stuff. And so oftentimes I would have to travel around to wherever things were going on with the company. And at this time, the company was headquartered in the town that I now live in, the very north of Idaho. And so I had to fly in to do a bunch of business with the company and such. And rather than them book me a hotel room, the owner of the company had bought this mountain house, cabin house, and had put a bunch of money into it and a bunch of resources and had made it ready for he and his family to live in. But they hadn't quite transitioned in there yet. And he's like, you know, rather than put you up in a hotel here in the town, do you want to just stay up in our mountain cabin? And I'm like, well, yeah, that would be great. You know, I'm a Midwestern guy and being able to like have some time up in the mountains, I thought was just really cool. So I took him up on the offer and that's where I stayed. And as I was there, I knew he had these night vision binoculars because we had talked about it, you know, several times. And how cool was that? So I wanted to go outside at night when it was all dark and quiet. It was a beautiful, I think it was late spring in 2014, I think. I've been thinking a lot about when it was because I want to be able to, you know, put a timestamp to all of this. So it was still really cold out, but the snow was mostly melted, and especially when you're up in the mountains, it's really cold. But the night sky up there was just so incredibly bright. And just came alive with the light of the stars and the partial moon. And so I thought, well, you know, I want to go out there on the porch and stargaze because I knew that most of the stars in our galaxy are actually red and they're not really visible with the naked eye. So I went out there with these night vision binoculars, and there were four power binoculars. So it's not like, you know, 20 or, you know, whatever power binoculars that people use for bird watching and stuff. So they're four power, but they were night vision. So generation one night vision, as a matter of fact. And I was out on the porch. I look up at the night sky, and it was just alive with these whole new groups of stars that I'd never seen before. And I was just marveling at the fact that I couldn't recognize constellations anymore because of the inclusion of all these other stars that I wouldn't normally be seeing. And it was just really, really amazing. So I'm looking around the night sky for a while. And then being, as I've never really had the opportunity to play with night vision before, I started looking around the valley because the house was situated on one side of a valley up on the mountain. And then it went down to a stream about 300 yards down. And there's a stream running down there. It was called Trout Creek, as a matter of fact. And then there would be, of course, the opposing mountain wall going up on the other side of the valley. And so I looked over at the opposing side of the valley and just thought it was so neat that I could make out all the individual pine trees and stuff over there and how much detail I was able to perceive with these night vision binoculars. And I'm playing around, looking around. And then I look around on the side of the valley that I'm on, the house, and I look down the driveway, which is a switchback driveway. Excuse me. And I'm looking down the really dark part of the driveway because there's so many huge conifer trees that no light is getting down there. It's just this black hole. But with the night vision binoculars, I can see all the way down there. I thought, wow, this is really cool. And just having a good time. And then suddenly I pan up with the night vision binoculars, and there was a huge tree. I'm panning up. I get to the top of it, and about 30 feet above it, lo and behold, there's this flying saucer sitting there. And it's literally the two proverbial pie plates, you know, stacked face to face, sitting there floating in the air, absolutely silent. And instead of, you know, instead of being the traditional, like most saucers you see are just like this pinched edge where it just comes to a point. Well, this had like the two pie plates, but there were these panels in between the two pie plates that were flashing lights going around in the circle. These panels would light up in a circular motion around the craft. I was like, what is this? You know, like I've told you all my life, I believed in this stuff. I really believe that there's, you know, probably things out there. And I've been looking at the stars my whole life, wondering why I never see anything like that. And there it was. It was right in front of me, and it was huge. And I'm talking, it was about 100, 150 yards away, roughly. And again, I'm looking at it through these four-power binoculars, and it's there. It's right there above the trees. And all this time, all this journey looking, and there it was. And sitting there quietly, stationary, right above the trees, not moving, not making a sound, not doing anything, just sitting there above the trees. And I'm beside myself because there it is. It's no longer a question. There's no longer any reason to guess about whether it's true or not. It's there. I know it's there. And I'm absolutely, you know, for lack of a better term, gobsmacked. It's just right there. And then I thought, I got to see this with my own eyes. So I'm looking at it above the pine trees with the binoculars. I lower the binoculars to see it with my own eyes. There's nothing above that tree. There's nothing there. It's just blank sky. And again, there was enough ambient light that you could make out pretty decently for the dark, as dark as it was, you could still see things reasonably well. And besides, the thing was emitting light in the binoculars. I could see these flashing lights going around. I should be seeing a Christmas tree there, but there's nothing. And I put up the binoculars. It's there. I take down the binoculars. It's not there. And I'm doing this back and forth like, oh my God, this is amazing. They can hide from us. It just occurred to me, they can sit there in plain sight and never be seen, never be observed. And it was just by chance I happened to be using night vision binoculars. So apparently they could cloak themselves to our native light frequencies that we perceive, but they were obviously visible in the infrared spectrum, so there it was. And I'm watching and I'm watching and I'm comparing without the binoculars. And then it occurred to me that I'm alone up in this valley. There's nobody around for miles and miles. And I'm sitting there. I'm like the only thing going on in this whole valley. And I'm sitting there looking at them. Chances are they're sitting there looking at me. And I was like, you know, I didn't really feel like I was in the mood for any probing or anything like that. So,
it would have made the hair on the back of your neck stand up once you kind of had that little bit of realization of what was going on.
It was exactly that. I was just like, oh God, okay, I'm going to go inside. I've had enough. And so I go inside, I lock the doors and I turn out the lights and I'm just sitting there and I go up on the bed and I'm sitting there for hours. But I am spending an awful lot of time peeking out the blinds around the house to see if anybody's coming for a visit. But as far as I know, that was the whole experience. But yeah, it's absolutely incredible.
Absolutely incredible, mate.
Yeah, it really was. It was one of those, you know, one in a billion maybe. I don't know. But I was just really honored to have had that experience.
And in that moment there, you always thought UFOs were real and all that kind of, I guess, genre. Was real, but when you saw it there, it did your world just kind of collapse and go, this is definite?
You know, I don't think it really collapsed as much as it was like validation that I wasn't just being silly for having these beliefs, you know. Yeah. For the belief in these things, because I really believe they were there. I've heard, you know, all of the shows and several books about people experiencing these fantastic things. And I was like, yeah, you know, I really think they could be there. But you kind of feel a little bit apprehensive about having a belief like that because it's a controversial belief. But at that point, it was real. It was just, okay, they are really here. There it is. And it was right in front of me. So I didn't really feel like it was anything other than validation.
It's an absolutely amazing encounter, and the fact that you got to see it so close is it's incredible. The fact that you could see so much detail on this craft, because a lot of people, when they have these types of encounters, their brand is that they, and you know this, they have them from miles away. They usually right. see them hundreds of meters in the sky, but from the sounds of yours was, you know, maybe literally 20 meters away from you or something like that, and right. to see the detail you got was incredible.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And you know, I still look at the night sky, but it is also kind of disconcerting to think that they could be always around us in broad daylight. They could be floating right above you and you wouldn't know. And you know, that kind of revelation was a bit unnerving.
Well, not even that. I mean, you can also apply the thought process to what was piloting this craft, if it was being piloted, what if they operate on the infrared spectrum as well?
Well, you know, that's a good question. That's a great observation. And honestly, I can say I've never considered that, but that, you know, that stands to reason, I guess. Why not? Perhaps that's their native band of light that they're perceiving and existing in.
And that could really, I guess, raise a lot of questions to, I guess, other paranormal encounters people have. Could they just be encountering beings that are operating in a different light spectrum?
Yeah, that's phenomenal. That's a phenomenal observation. You know, my hat's off to you. That has never occurred to me. That's brilliant.
So next time you feel like something's watching you, it might just actually be maybe a creature from another galaxy or another world just in the infrared realm.
Well, I'll tell you what, the first thing I did after this experience when I got home was I went on Amazon and ordered a pair. So I got a pair now.
Oh, mate, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Why wouldn't you? After that, I'll just be sitting in the backyard looking at the sky the entire time, even just to see the other galaxies that you just don't get to see.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, I will say that since I've had them, I've gone out and I actually recorded a little anomaly that I did catch right outside of my door. Maybe it was in 2016. I went outside and I was just testing it. So the one failing of this design was that there's no way to record. So whatever experience you have is a personal experience only. There's no way to you know, quantify that for other people and say, look, I can show you this, because they don't record. But what I did was I rigged up a knockoff of a GoPro into one of the eyepieces and went outside and just started recording the night sky. And I caught something that I can't explain, and it's not nearly as profound as this, but it is a light that is moving away from me. It's a solid big light silently moving away, and I was facing north outside of my door, and it was heading from southwest to northeast, moving away from me, and it was still a bright light. So I know first of all I wasn't hearing it, so I know it wasn't just a normal aircraft. Secondly, normal aircraft don't have lights pointing out their back. They have landing lights. And, you know, that's to see the runway or whatever, to be seen by the towers. But they don't point lights out their back. So whatever this was, it's a steady light moving just quietly across the sky. And I did record it. And I use that during the Paranormal Portal on Friday, Saturday nights. We have to run breaks because we're on the network. And so the second break, or no, the first break that I run on the first half hour break, it has the green infrared footage of that event.
Wow, that's amazing, because I regularly try to watch your YouTube channel, because it kind of airs around the lunch break period for me.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I try to get on there nearly every day that you do it, because you and Don are a couple of madmen, and you broadcast 7 days a week, along with doing three podcast episodes on top of that. So you are—you almost have very understanding partners, I must say.
yeah, pretty forgiving. You know, it's a good life. What can I say?
Yeah, most definitely. Now, what do you think is these lights are? Do you think they're from out of this world? Do you think it might be something man-made? Do you think it's just the next step in technology for our military to move into this infrared spectrum?
You know, the thing is. If it was a triangle and I saw it, I could say, you know what, maybe it's one of the TR-3Bs that everybody talks about. That's a reverse engineered craft, allegedly. But the fact that it was a saucer had no observable propulsion at all. It was just a saucer floating there with these panels of light going around and invisible to their native spectrum. To me, that seems to at least imply, and I don't pretend I know, you know, what we're capable of or what kind of black projects are out there, but the fact that it was cloaked in our normal light spectrum, had no observable propulsion. Got stuck in that word. And you know, it was a saucer type craft. I just really don't think it was ours, but you know, I guess it could be. I don't know. It's hard to say, brother.
It really is. And I mean, technology is advancing quite quickly. I mean, you just have a look at how quickly technology's advanced over the last 50 years.
Oh,
it's,
man.
It's skyrocketing, and it kind of makes you wonder, are they lending this technology from something else, or are we really just genuinely making these gigantic scientific leaps in, I guess, in our evolution?
Yeah. You know, and then there's the story I think we all have heard, that, you know, the computers you have at home are incredible, but the ones that the military has are at least 30 years advanced to that. And so you start thinking, wow, what exactly do they have?
Yeah, it's it kind of makes me excited, because I'm a bit of a tech head too. So I'm always looking for the next best thing as well. So that's that gets me very, very excited.
Right.
And just like that, it's time for break. So let's go to break real quick, and we'll pay some bills, and then we'll be right back with Brent Thomas and Cade Moya on Paranormal Portal.
Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family.
I want to hear about your Sasquatch encounter, because I was not aware of this.
Yeah. Now this story happened when I was about 14 years old. And, I used to live right next to a state park, a state forest preserve in Minnesota. And it was pretty common for us. We lived very, very much out in the country. So, we spent a lot of our time in this forest preserve and, monkeying around, just being kids. So I was 14, and a good friend of mine and I were hiking up the bluff, and they call them bluffs. I don't know if you're familiar with the term bluff, but it's just basically a short, rounded top mountain. And we were hiking up there, and of course, it's all forest and such there. Not really, really far away from homes and stuff, but a comfortable cushion anyway. And we're hiking up this ravine. We got up on top of the hill, and we're just being kids, rolling down rocks and you know, being stupid, just burning up a summer day. And it started getting dark. And so we're like, you know, we got to really start working our way down, because you don't want to be trapped in a forest in the dark at night when there's no light. So we started working our way down, and we're working down this ravine. It's a dry run. The only time it ever runs with water is during the spring melt, but it's quite a significant ravine with dried up waterfalls and stuff. And so we're hiking down, and we get to this one spot, which is kind of like it's a dried up waterfall that has about a 8-foot rise, above some boulders below it, and then a bunch of rocky stream bed that's all dried up. And we stop there, and we're catching our breath, and suddenly we're both standing there right on the edge of this waterfall looking forward, and we hear this most deep, horrifying growl that I have ever heard in my life. And it was so powerful. so deep that it vibrated me as much as I was hearing it. My whole body was shaking with this rumbling. And it was like right behind us, about right behind us and above us. So what I think, whatever it was standing right behind us and growling. And it was just like so close. And I'm here to tell you, Cade, I didn't ever see it. But I could not make myself turn around, because whatever was behind me, I knew with every fiber of my being was about to kill me. And I didn't want to see what that looked like. I mean, I just thought, I thought I was dead.
How close was it to you, do you think?
I would say it was within the 8 to 10 foot range.
Oh, wow. That's really close.
It's really, really close. And I don't know. I mean, we just came down this bed, and didn't seem like there was anywhere for it to hide, but it was just suddenly there. And it was just right behind us, and just this deep, menacing growl. And it was the most terrifying sound I've ever heard in my life. I mean, even now as I'm thinking about it, I'm getting chills, you know, just thinking about it. But we were both frozen. We couldn't move. And finally, I asked my friend, I said, "What is that?" And he said, "I don't know, but we got to get the hell out of here." And suddenly, you know, I mean, there's the whole fight or flight thing, right? And, you know, the thing was, is whatever was making that sound was well out of our fight category. And we both knew that. Whatever was making that kind of sound was not something we could fight. It was just unreasonable to even think that. So the only thing left was flight. And people say, don't run. But what else is there? I mean, either you stay there and let it do whatever it's going to do, or you at least take a shot at it. So we just took the shot at it and just flew down this boulder field, jumping from rock to rock, and just got out of there, never looking back once. But it was the most incredibly menacing sound I've heard. And this area that I grew up in, Cade, like, the biggest thing we have is white-tailed deer. So whatever this was, didn't belong. It wasn't part of the natural fauna that we knew growing up and being in those forests, you know, every day of every summer.
Yeah, right. So there was no natural predators,
nothing
to that area or anything like that.
Not even black bear are in that area. There's just nothing there except deer. There's coyotes, but nothing that could have made that sound. And for years and years and years, I mean, at this time in my life, kid, I didn't have a concept of what it was. I just knew that whatever it was is huge, and it had the worst menacing growl I've ever heard. I knew that there was Bigfoot in the world, but the only reason I knew that was because Leonard Nimoy on In Search Of told me that they were in the Washington forests out on the coast. I'm in Midwest, you know, United States. There's not supposed to be anything like that over there. And, you know, I had no scope for whatever this was. So for years, I carried this around in my head, just going, something really big growled at us, and we don't know what it is. We got out of there. We were fine. But it was the most terrifying experience of my young life by a long shot. I mean, I was going to die. And
how old were you when it happened?
14.
Wow.
I was 14. So, you know, I carried that through my years. And I'll tell you, it was the first time I heard something that reminded me of the intensity and the scale of that growl was, honest to God, the movie Jurassic Park, when that big T-Rex comes down to the window, its eyeballs going right inside of the window with that little girl in there. And it just does this really deep growl. And I just got chills in the theater, and my heart just started racing. I was like, I kind of know what that feels like, you know? And I didn't know what it could be for many, many years, until I finally eventually started getting into the whole research of Bigfoot. And I found out that they're everywhere. They're not just in the Pacific coast. They're everywhere. There's reports in every state of the U.S. except for Hawaii. And then I started learning what some researchers say, you know, is things that they do, like tree breaks and different structures and such. And I went back to the same woods, and I started finding tree breaks, and I started finding, you know, these sapling branches broken off and the bark peeled off of them, you know, from like 8 feet up in the air and things like that. And I was like, oh my God, that all of a sudden might explain what that growl was that I heard so many years ago.
And did you have any other encounters with anything similar in that area, or was that kind of the only one?
You know, I think that there are things going on in that area, and I'll tell you a story. After having that experience and after seeing some of the signage, I actually found a structure up in those woods too. It was a very low structure, but it was totally concealed by huge boulders from anything downhill of it. It was just this really rudimentary structure built out of these sticks and not a cut stick in the whole bunch. It was all broken. These huge branches and stuff were snapped and they created a structure. And my brother, probably 15 years ago or so was telling me he was deer hunting. And he said he was bow hunting and he had this really big buck come up and he was hunting in the same region. And he said he got it. He drew back and got a really good lung shot on this big buck. And he said it was bleeding out huge. It had air bubbles in the blood, you know, so he knew it was a lung shot. And it was this huge blood trail. And he said he followed it for probably a few hundred yards through the thick, scrubby brush that it ran through. Well, he waited for a friend to come. And then they both went to track it because, you know, there was nobody else hunting in the area. He said he got to the end where this blood trail just stopped. And he said, there couldn't have been any blood left in this thing. It should have been right there laying down. But there was nothing. There was nothing. Not even a gut pile like somebody else found it and dressed it out and carried it out. Because, you know, Minnesota deer, white-tailed deer, is probably like 150 pounds fully dressed. And so, you got 250, maybe even, you know, 180 pounds. But, you know, you dress them out. You pull out all the insides and just leave them. But there was nothing there. No tracks, nothing. This deer just disappeared. Now, in learning and researching about the Bigfoot, many hunters talk about the fact that they believe Bigfoot have taken their kills. You know, it's the situations just like that. So I think they're still in the area. I don't think they're there all the time. I think that they migrate through in certain periods of the year from maybe the far north down to some warmer south. But I think they're there.
Yeah, I definitely think that the Bigfoot, the Yowie, the Sasquatch creature, I definitely think it is a creature that definitely travels.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on its food sources or water sources or anything like that. Because, I mean, the areas that these creatures are in, they're always vastly different. Because, I mean, if we try to compare the Yowie's habitat to the Sasquatch's habitat, it's similar but also very, very different in the sense that Some Yowies are basically out in the driest parts of Australia and mm-hmm. they seem to adapt and cope. And then you find Yowies that are basically in the same area that I live in, the basically tropical rainforest.
Yeah.
And they adapt just as well. So mm-hmm. it makes me wonder if these creatures are traveling to different areas of, you know, their, I guess surrounding areas to constantly survive.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. And there's no question in my mind that these are the most adaptable creatures on the face of the earth, that they can exist in any climate that our earth has to offer. And some people say, well, people are adaptable too. And it's like, no, we're not. We move into an area and we create things that recreate the comfort that we want.
But yeah, exactly.
They actually go and live and flourish in the hardest, darkest climates in our earth and do just fine.
Yeah, I like to think that us humans are probably the softest creatures in all of existence.
We're a bunch of cream puffs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no question.
So, mate, I want to hear about your ghost experiences because this one probably hits a little bit closer to home because you said you've started to encounter some weird things since you've started doing the podcast. And not only that, They're actually happening in your little studio that you've got set up.
Yeah, we've got definitely ghosts in the machine here, Cade. I tell you, I've had several encounters, and sometimes I'll just, you know, full disclosure, I can't always differentiate them from what could just be technical problems because I got a lot of things running. I've got a lot of power and a lot of electronics going, and electronics can be glitchy. However, some of the problems that I've had, I can't figure out. I mean, I just can't figure out. They don't make sense. Just weird things like a mic will die. Just suddenly mic will die. And it won't come back on until just suddenly it'll just come back on. Like it just had a bad mood or something. and technical glitches like that, cameras weird and things falling off the wall behind me, and lots of strangeness like that. But now everything behind me on the wall is nailed, so so nothing's coming down now, because I got tired of picking up the studio wall. I'd go to bed every night and then come back down, and like most of the things I had hit, you know, on the wall with these strong adhesives were laying on the floor. I was like, okay, I'm nailing it all. So I did, and so far they're staying put. So, so that's good. But I'll tell you, the most recent thing that happened was I was sitting here in the studio, and basically my studio room is split in half. I got a music studio on one half and the actual production studio on the other half. And I've got a wall of monitors in front of me. There's these big 21, 23-inch monitors in, you know, that sit on the top of my desk, and then my camera's above that on a big tripod. And all of a sudden I was sitting here just kind of focused on what was on the screen, and I see a head coming past the top of my monitors, just like a, you know, like a head, a shadowy head. And I thought, just, you know, seeing it out of my peripheral vision, oh, you know, my wife is in here, she must need to grab something. And then I watched as it came just about in front of my face, like directly in front of me, and then bend down and disappear. And I'm thinking, well, what's she doing? Because I'm not hearing her do anything on the other side of these monitors and stuff. And she's not getting up, so what the hell's going on? So I get up and walk around my monitors, and I'm looking back there. Well, I forgot that whole area is full of boxes and stuff that I had been, you know, putting in or moving around as I was putting together the music studio. There was no way anybody could even walk there. And but I clearly saw this head move. It was about a five-foot range head coming behind my monitors, bending down and disappearing.
That's creepy. That's really creepy, man.
so that was one of the most, that's the most recent thing that I can remember that's coming to mind. I know there's been more, but it, you know, honestly, when you do a show about this stuff, I really believe that the constant mention, the constant energy that goes into discussing these things probably creates a magnetism of sorts, you know, and so they maybe key off of that and go, what's going on over here? If, you know, I feel the vibes. And so they come check it out. We've been,
or if anything, mate, they could be really big fans of your podcast too.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I can't blame them for that, Cade. But, you know, I mean, it's just that strangeness. One time, I'll tell you, there's this really weird one that happened about a year and a half ago. And, I think it was about then, yeah, maybe a year, year and a half. But I was, the studio at this time was in the upstairs of the house. And my wife and my bedroom used to be in the room that the studio's in now. And so I had just gotten home, or had just gotten done with everything and was coming to bed. I was absolutely exhausted. And so I came in, and my son happened to be up. He was just a night owl for a long time, and he was up way late. And so I was like, okay, you know, well, I'm going to run use the bathroom. And so I do, and leaving my wife alone in the bedroom. And just outside of the bedroom, of course, is the living room. And there's a big, you know, 55-inch TV out there. And I take my son into the he's coming with me. I shouldn't say I'm taking him. He's just following me everywhere. So he's stuck to me like glue. And so, of course, you know, I couldn't even go to the bathroom alone. He's right there with me. And, you know, I'm washing up and just getting ready for bed, brushing my teeth. And the door shut. And all of a sudden, my wife's on the other side of the door going, who's playing around with the remote? I said, what do you mean? And so she says, no, the TV's on and flipping channels and going to menus and stuff. And I'm like, well, nobody has a remote. And I took her out in the living room and showed her it was up on top of this bookcase. Even my little boy couldn't have gotten to it. And she said, oh, my God, something weird's happened. And then we looked at the TV, and it was frozen on this image. And she said, what happened was, she was sitting up in bed, and suddenly the TV in the living room right next to her goes on, and it's within, like, she can see it out the bedroom door clearly from where she is in bed. And menus started popping up, it started flipping stations. And she said, hey, what are you doing with the TV? And all of a sudden it froze on this image of Charlie Sheen, and it said in like ghostly writing under him, infamous. And it froze on an image of Charlie Sheen looking directly into the bedroom out of the corner of his eyes in this menacing, freaking look. It froze like that. And then it was frozen like that. And this is a live TV. It shouldn't have frozen at all. But it froze right on that image as soon as she yelled at it. And then she came and asked me who was messing with the remotes. I said, nobody. We're in here brushing my teeth, getting ready for bed. And I come out and I see that image on the screen. And I'm like, ooh. And so she made me sage the house that right after that. She's like, you're staging now. So true story.
Wow.
And there's no explanation for it. Why then? Why did it happen? Now, TVs can do weird stuff. Electronics can do weird stuff. However, the fact that when she yelled at it, it froze. It stopped and froze on an image. Live TV froze and on an image of it looking at her. And with the really creepy face of Charlie Sheen, which is enough to give anybody a little bit of pause. But it was just a really creepy experience. And it was just all of the weirdness compiled into one tight event that makes it just not chance to my mind.
Yeah, most definitely. Have you ever had any EVP experiences or anything while you've been recording the show or doing one of your live streams?
Yeah, you know, I have. I've heard things. But here's another situation where I can't be sure. Because of all the variables that are in place during any one of my shows, with the mics, the mixing board, the computer, the internet, with, you know, other factors of electronics that are going on around me, I can't be sure that it, I mean, I have never gotten something so clear that I could say that's an EVP, but I've gotten lots of auditory anomalies that seem to be one-off events that never repeat. Things coming through my headphones all the time when I'm doing the show. Like I'm hearing what sounds like a voice talking sometimes or just a noise that sounds very, very human. You know, that stuff comes into my headphones quite often, actually. But I've never gone back through and really dug into it because I really can't, you know, clinically or scientifically substantiate that it is evidence. But in my mind, it is. But I could never present that as evidence to anybody else without, you know, without considering the fact that there's a lot of electronics going on and electronics can get quirky.
Yeah, exactly. And it's usually one of those things that if you're not in that moment, you're not really going to get it or you're not going to understand it because it's usually an accumulation of events that lead to that scenario. So,
yeah.
You know, you may have been talking about something that may have been building up spiritual energy or mm-hmm. something like that. And then to try explain that to someone who maybe has no idea of what you're talking about or how the situation was actually at that moment.
Right.
It's it can be really hard to get across the experience that you had without people just going, yeah, it could have just been anything really.
Right. And you know, you I'm sure run into this as well, just the ferocity that people will defend their paradigm. So if somebody doesn't want to believe something, they will make sure that they present a reason why that can't be, and they will stick to it with their life. No matter how compelling your evidence is, they're gonna adhere to it. And if you ever look at some of the scientific explanations for some of the phenomena going on, the variables that they try to offer in a scientific explanation are more profound than just saying, well, it was a ghost, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if the amount of effort that went into disproving something, that went into proving something, we would have a lot more evidence, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, people will ferociously defend their paradigm. And, you know, it borders on the ridiculous most of the time. But, you know, I understand people like their three dimensions. They like their walls and their lawn and their fence and the world to make sense like they understand it. And when something threatens that, they will defend it just fiercely.
Oh, absolutely. I just had a guy on the podcast, and he had this fantastic UFO encounter that he had with two mates of his. Uh-huh. And his two mates refused to believe it happened because it shakes their world too much.
Yeah. And how frustrating is that? Because for him, I'm sure it was the most amazing, profound thing, maybe scary even. And it probably, you know, if he was shook up about it, it probably would have helped to talk to his friends and get a little compassion. But, you know, instead he got, I'm sure, an earful of flack for, you know, even suggesting it.
Yeah. And it's really sad because these are people who have these real life encounters, and to be shut down by strangers is one thing, but to be shut down by the people that you have these encounters with is it's another.
Right. No, I agree completely, brother. And you know, I guess it's kind of par for the course, I guess, because you know, people don't want to believe in this stuff, because if they do, it suggests that there really isn't a reality that we know and understand anymore. There's just this soup of events that happen, and sometimes weird things come out of it, and it's hard to make sense of.
That's exactly it, mate. That's exactly it. Well, Brent, I want to thank you for joining me today, mate. It was a little bit of an effort for us to kind of get our schedules aligned up. I've been busy with work, and you've been busy producing 20,000 shows a week. But we finally got it to line up. But can you let my audience know where they can find a little bit more about you?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. If y'all, we don't currently have a webpage. We're working on that. And, but with the help of some amazing friends, we'll be getting that together in the near future here. But, we are always on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. We're doing 7 live shows a week, 7 days a week, at 7 PM Pacific Standard Time, US time, every day of the week. So if you want to check out what we're up to, or you want to see the magic of us doing it. And I laugh when that point comes, because usually it's barely controlled chaos, but we have a good time doing it. Stop over to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/paranormalportal. And be sure to check out our podcast. And it's on all the major podcasting networks. And it's the Paranormal Portal Podcast.
That's it. And mate, I'll leave links for all of that in our show notes. So if anyone who's listening, they want to go check you out, they'll be able to find you just by checking your show notes on your whatever podcast app or on our website.
Well, brother, I got to thank you too, because the other time you and I did a show, I've met a whole bunch of people that were introduced to the show from the Believe audience. And it's just been a real pleasure meeting you all. And thank you for all the kind words you guys have sent my way. And I'm just happy to have had the chance to reach out across the world and get to know you guys.
Fantastic.
What great words from Brent Thomas, and great stories as presented by Cade Moya of the Believe podcast from Australia. Thank you again. Thank you, Cade. We do appreciate you. And of course, all of your listeners that have been supporting us as well. We do look forward to talking with you more. Don't forget, you can catch Paranormal Portal at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at youtube.com/paranormalportal. Also, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. Thanks, and have a great day. Thank you.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.